Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who's that knocking at the door? It's all your friends, you filthy whore. Your husband's gone, and we've got books and a bottle of wine to kill.
It's Hollywood.
It's books.
It's gossip.
I'm shook.
It's memoirs.
It's martinis.
It's Studio 54.
It's Celebrity Book Club. Come read it while it's hot. Celebrity Book Club. Tell your secrets, we won't talk.
Celebrity Book Club.
No boys are allowed.
Celebrity Book Club.
Club. Buzz me in, I brought the Cuervo.
Hello, best friend.
Hello, best friend. Or should I say, former best friends who have come into my courtroom to adjudicate this disturbance. And I'm very disturbed by what I see.
So let me get this straight. We've been friends for now going on 31 years. Yet your daughter came into my house yesterday, broke my fridge, then kissed my son-in-law, left a mess on my rug, stained my rug, and that is why I'm taking you to court today in this podcast.
Your Honor, the fridge was already broken. I happen to know that the fridge had a faulty latch. Because, Your Honor, the defendant's husband failed to install the latch properly, even though he said he would.
Now, what do you have business knowing about how my husband installs fridge latches, huh? Why are we talking? When just like, hey, what's up, Steven? Like,
literally, hi, how are you?
Literally, hi.
We're in the freezing dead of winter, but I'm still feeling sunny and happy. Maybe because I just got back from vacation. It was actually not a vacation. It was a workcation because I was working.
You were?
Well, I was reading the book for this episode.
Okay.
On the beach. That's work.
It is work.
AKA, the entire trip is a work expense and I'm writing it off.
No. Yes. Hashtag accountants. Wait, no, it literally is a workcation to read the amazing 170-page book that we read this week. Some of us in the cold, some of us at the beach office, by the highest paid woman in television.
Judge Judy Scheindlin.
And her second book,
Beauty Fades, Dumb Is Forever. The Making of a Happy Woman.
Author of Don't Pee on My Leg and Tell Me It's Raining.
And she has her arms crossed on the cover wearing her like doily and judge robe.
Making of a Happy Woman when it's just like she's famously also the grumpiest woman in America.
And yet she's sitting pretty on a pile of cash. Wait, I just looked it up. Guess what her net worth is?
I think I looked it up too, and it's like $66 billion or something.
It's literally
like that.
$440 million. Actually insane.
That's what you get when you're syndicated.
Yeah.
Daytime TV.
Because you're getting paid by every affiliate in the nation that's running the show. It's crazy.
People shit on, you know, oh, daytime TV, who watches it? Well, she's laughing all the
way. I mean, I'm watching and I'm at the gym on the goddamn elliptical and there's Judge Judy. I think probably a lot of people know her from their phones on the GIF where she's tapping the watch. And she's got a gorgeous watch. I wish we had friend of the pod.
Dime piece
to let us know what this is. It looks like a thin kind of Cartier from like 1998 or something.
And she's also wearing her big ass ring, which she talks about yes. in the book.
So this book is, it's kind of like a Vice for Women book.
Yeah.
And it's sort of predicated on the idea that in her many years in the courtroom, so before she was on Judge Judy, she worked in family court in Lower Manhattan.
I mean, the stuff she was seeing.
Lot of domestic abuse, lot of drug use, lot of like neglect. Kids, a lot of custody battles.
Child abuse.
And what she sees over and over and over again are women who are
victims.
Victims. Victims of circumstance, victims of their family, victims of the economy, and victims of men. And so much of the time she sees women allowing themselves to be walked all over by these assholes.
Trampled by men.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, y'all. Judge Judy, don't get her wrong. She may be roasting men, but it's really a guide to like how to get a woman's power and how to deal with men.
Mm-hmm.
Because she, if she is nothing but not horny for her on and off husband, fellow judge Jerry
Sheindlin.
And they were married for like 10 years. So she was first married to a guy named Ron. And
Ron was an asshole.
Ron was an asshole. He expected her to do everything. Okay. And a lot of women don't stand up for themselves and get themselves in these situations where, you know, they had two kids and he said, I'm not going to even help raise these kids until they can speak to me, which is a pretty insane thing to say. But, you know, our current dads right now are wearing their little Carhartt baby holders. I don't know what you call them.
Oh, those like the front packs. Yeah.
But back then, rearing children was a woman's job.
Well, and it still is for the most part. I mean, that was one interesting thing she talks about, how she's like, and times have changed a little bit, and now men are like helping out more. But I think in the vast majority of cases, women are doing the vast majority of the work and raising kids.
Right. She's like, the key word, they're helping.
No, they're helping. And the men say that. Yeah. They're like,
never doing.
They're never doing. They're helping. So then she like moves to the suburbs with her first husband. She's bored out of her goddamn mind, changing diapers, chasing kids around. And she runs into an old law school colleague. When the children were still in nursing school, I attended a bar association luncheon where I ran into a former classmate from law school. We started talking, and it turned out that he was running the Manhattan office of the family court. He asked me, what have you been doing? And I told him, changing a lot of diapers, raising a couple wonderful kids, going berserk, the usual. What about you? He said, that's perfect. You're exactly who I need in my office. You want a job? What could I say? Yes, thanks. I do. Great. When do I start? I returned home elated. When Ron came home for dinner that evening, I told him, I'm going back to work in 2 weeks. He almost choked on his food. What do you mean? You're going back to work in 2 weeks. What about the kids? I called around this afternoon, I replied, and I'm going to interview a few daytime caretakers. They can do some of the housework too. Ron stared at me. Stunned. And so he's just like, doesn't think she should go back to work. And then he literally goes, Judy, you work because you want to, okay? You're playing, but I have to work. Can you believe the gall of these men?
The balls, or sorry, the lack of balls on this guy.
Right. Like, so threatened by a woman's success.
A woman in the workforce.
God forbid she not be spiritually fulfilled by changing diapers all day. For this guy's kids.
I mean, can you imagine though being Ron, this book comes out in whatever, 1996? She really got the last laugh.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
All the way to the bank. And there was a moment also in their marriage when she was like, it's over. And she really had to like convince her parents because like divorce was seen as a failure.
And like she still kind of, after there was like another year and her parents were really like, divorce is so bad.
I mean, my parents never told my Nana.
Really?
That they got divorced? I mean, she was like in her 90s. It was a little bit like, let's keep it closeted. But yeah, we all did this whole like lying thing where like my grandmother would be on like her bed being like, where's your mother? I'd be like, oh, she's home making dinner. And she was like, that's good.
Oh, you were always like, she's being a good housewife. She's making meatballs for the family.
No, we literally were like, she's making macaroni. She was like, good, good. So you'll have macaroni. Come home.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Little lies for that age, but it's like her parents, they weren't that old, but a different generation.
No, I mean, that's the classic thing. It's like, you don't need to tell your grandparents that you're going to divorce.
That you're poly.
Exactly. You don't need to come out as poly to your grandparents.
Which is the modern divorce.
Right. It's the same like equivalent and sort of like carries the albatross of shame.
But one day, yeah, basically she reflecting back is like, wait, why did I move for Ron? Because she did. Because she honestly was like, he's the man. And then one day he like hurts himself playing dodgeball. He's always playing so many games. And then he's like, Judy, will you help me go to the bathroom? And she's like, do it yourself. And then he's like, what? Because like, he would never help change a diaper. But then she does give in because as women, as she talks about, we think, oh, we have to nurture.
Yeah.
This whole book is about laundry also.
It's literally entirely about laundry and dry cleaning and pressing shirts.
And dry cleaning. And like the most, it's like all about like Long Island errands. She's just like, women make all the social appointments. You think I want to make all the social appointments? I don't, but I do because Jerry expects.
And she's just like, we're doing dinner with the Rabinowitzes on Saturday and you're going to be there.
And she's like, oh, and he just gets to float on by and be the star of the dinner with the Rabinowitzes.
Telling all his juicy anecdotes from criminal court.
But so basically she divorces Ron and then she never goes out at night, but like one night, like she gets invited to the local watering hole, like Kelly's of like Massapequa, to like go on Fridays.
No, it's Peggy Doyle's downtown because they're working by the courthouses in Dewey Square. Right. So I was working at a prosecutor in family court in Manhattan at 60 Lafayette Street. That's downtown at the edge of the island.
I need to be more referred to as like the island.
It was Friday night and Jerry had just finished a big trial in which he'd been victorious. As I was wrapping up my work for the week, my boss came into my office, stuck his head in the door and invited me to join the rest of the lawyers for a drink at Peggy Doyle's, a local watering hole favored by the legal crowd. I usually left the office by 5:30 p.m. for the trek to Hartsdale, but this was a Friday. My parents had made it a habit to come up every Friday to spend their day and night visiting. My father's dentistry practice allowed him Fridays off. So we like to come up to golf.
She is also such a daddy's girl, even though she's like consistently like 900. No. Like just always being like, my father was the most amazing dentist.
I mean, she's classic hopping in daddy's lap until the age of 70.
Yeah.
Of course, her dad is a dentist. Like, it is just the iconic upper middle class, like...
You can make a lot of money as a dentist.
Dentists make a ton of money.
They have the best hours. And that's why everyone became a dentist.
Literally, dentistry is the sickest fucking gig in the world. First of all, you don't literally have to do anything. You come in at the end of the visit after the, like, dental hygienist
has,
like,
done the clean.
You come in, you take a look at the teeth. You're like, looks good. Make sure to floss. Gotta go.
But, and then you make, like, kind of a silly joke and it's yeah. Like...
And then you're just pulling in like 300K a year.
All dentists have like such like big arms with like arm hair and just like it's always like the shiniest watch in your face. They're like picking plaque.
And like dangling so many chains. I remember my dentist as a child, Dr. Sonus, just like the biggest, bushiest mustache. And just always getting right in there with all his little tools. Wobbin Dental. And I just like, I mean, of course it was a sexual, it was an erotic experience for me. Absolutely. Getting worked on in my big orifice. God, and I had headgear too. I was such a freak.
You had headgear? I guess I missed that.
Yeah.
That's like the worst fear as a kid, to get like headgear.
It was before we met and it was so crazy. It was like a torture device. It was like a crazy helmet that like pulled back on your teeth. And like, I literally looked like Hannibal Lecter, but like as a 9-year-old. And it was just like so horrifying. It's really why I'm such a bitch today.
No, it literally
it's
is.
Very like Tina Fey, like flashback.
And you accused me, I feel like the other day, you were like, oh, I bet you were always like making fun of me for wearing a retainer when I actually like literally never made fun of you for wearing a retainer, but like you have a hang up clearly.
It was like, I don't care what your fucking retainer back in.
Now I will make fun of you.
And you also know dentists, along with surgeons, are one of the most Republican leaning medical professions.
So they make the most money.
I mean, a lot of doctors make a lot of money, but to me, I think it's because if you're doing like surgery or something like that, like you kind of need to be a little bit more detached.
Mm.
If you're doing like precision work on the body, it's actually a benefit to be able to like dehumanize people and to like see people as,
yeah, as you're like
not people
drilling into someone's mouth.
Yeah. I mean, it's also an incredibly sadistic profession.
Yeah. The like, vibe, if you're into like drilling and cutting, but also like wearing polos and like Rolexes and golf.
It's giving Republican energy.
And like giving stickers out. Back to Judy.
Back to Judy. So her father's dentistry practice allowed him Fridays off. So we like to come up to golf. It gave my mother a chance to fuss over her grandchildren. If I wanted to stay out a little late after work on a Friday, I could. Nevertheless, I declined my boss's invitation.
Irregardless.
It had been a long week, and I really did just want to go home, put my feet up, and be with my parents, which is so crazy. It's just like you're like a working professional, like 32-year-old woman. You're like, oh, I just want to go home and be with my parents. But when I left the building, I decided on a whim to stop by Peggy's for a few minutes. I walked into the bar, and there, sitting at the center of the group, was Jerry Scheindlin, regaling everyone with the colorful tale of his victory in court earlier that day. All my friends were standing around him, enjoying his blow-by-blow description of the case he won. Jerry was a great storyteller. He still is. I took one look at this guy, and something moved inside of me. I wanted to meet him. So in my typical delicate manner, I walked over to where he was sitting, stuck my finger in his face, and turning to one of his friends, demanded, "Who's this?" I felt my finger suddenly enveloped by Jerry's very warm hand. Our eyes locked. The first words he ever directed to me were memorable. He said, "Get your finger out of my face, lady." And I've been with him ever since, except for our divorce.
It's such a rom-com when you like, but kind of like you're picturing like Anne Hathaway or something like that. And you see this guy and everyone's in suits. Wait, and he's like,
Anne Hathaway as Judge Judy, that biopic? That would be an insane casting choice. And she would nail it, I'm sure.
She would nail it so hard. She would be overdoing the accent so much.
Oh, yeah.
Get out of my court. Sustained. And she's like taking off the robe and being like, oh, Jerry. Court was so
awful. Court was awful. Rub my feet, will you?
Oh, you always know how to rub my feet. It's just so wild reading this and the fights about laundry. And she's like, she tells this whole story about how, like, she went skiing just to impress him because, like, that's what he loved to do. But, like, she hated skiing. And she was like, he was so attractive. And me and Jerry just had that click.
She does say he's short at one point because they're driving in a Porsche. And he's, like, going so fast. And he's, like, having such a road rage. And she's just like, Jerry, you can pass 18 more Mazdas in your porch, but you're still going to be short. And that got him going.
Because he behaved himself for 10 more miles.
Yeah.
I mean, he's taller than her, but she's also like 4'10".
Oh, yeah. I mean, people on TV are tiny. They got to fit in the box. I do feel like he has a
He's
normal...
packing.
Oh.
But don't you think for her small stature?
No, I mean, I don't think you need a ton of dick to dick down Judy.
She's a spinner.
She's a spinner for sure.
Celebrity Book Club.
It was that summer. That summer, I started using Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth makes elevated loungewear and amazing, luxurious, soft bedding that surpasses even the finest hotel sheets for a restful night's sleep on your travels or at home. I love Cozy Earth so much that I got it as a present for my spouse. And the things that happened on that bed, you wouldn't believe it. I got their joggers and oh my God, it almost feels like you're nude, better than nude. It feels like you're swimming in the most luxurious ocean. So stay cool and comfy during long flights with Cozy Earth's temperature regulating bamboo joggers and pullover crew, adding a touch of style to your travel ensemble. Discover your next destination for ultimate comfort at Cozy Earth. Visit CozyEarth.com and use our code CBC at checkout to get 35% off. and let them know we sent you after checkout, okay?
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Celebrity Book Club.
So, does she have like a huge rack? It's kind of hard to tell because she's always wearing the judge robe and she's behind the thing. Like, never seen her in, like, a form-fitting outfit.
That brings me just to one of her court cases about, like, women and beauty that I'm just going to jump to, speaking of Taz.
Oh, the plastic surgery section? Wait, this part is insane. I love this part.
So, you know, she's kind of going down all these things, just being like, you got to have grit and morals, you know, to be a woman. Like, the cover, you know. Beauty fades, diamonds forever, she goes. Last year, I had a case on Judge Judy. A woman was suing her doctor because she claimed after two breast enhancement surgeries, her breasts were not perfect. She felt she needed a third procedure to fix the problem, and her husband was standing by her side in full agreement. Since there were no photos, I asked the woman to step into my chambers so I could evaluate the evidence. Suffice to say, these were breasts of a goddess. If they were uneven, as she claimed, it certainly wasn't visible to the naked eye. I returned to the bench and said, I'm jealous. I'm my age, even uneven. I'm just happy I have them. This statement was true, but there had to be more to her fixation. I focused on her husband. Sir, I said, you encouraged your wife to see another plastic surgeon have a third operation. I was dismayed, and it showed. You should have encouraged her to see a psychiatrist.
Hello, honey. Boom. This woman needs therapy, not surgery.
You know, and it was clear this guy was pressuring her, you know, to just keep on going and going.
So this is an interesting question, because I do kind of feel like you're in a slightly impossible situation as a husband when your wife is like, do I? Because of course you say, no, honey, you're perfect the way you are. But then she's just like, oh, I don't like the job that they did on the surgery. Like, if you say, no, they look good, then you're like gaslighting her. And it's like, hello, believe women. Like, she says the surgery was wrong.
Well, and also you want to be like her warrior.
Yes.
Into the medical field.
Exactly. Because like, doctors are always not believing women. So, you know, I feel like you're in a catch-22. It's like, if you're, well, first of all, if your partner said she wanted implants, what would you do?
I would say, whatever makes you happy, baby.
Right answer.
If you want to do it, I'll support you. If you don't want to do it, I'll also support you. I'll drive and pick you up if you need to.
Now, she comes back and she's got the new tits and you're like, to you, they're perfect. And she's going, I don't like them. I need another surgery. What do you say?
I feel like then you kind of realize it actually is more of it. It's never enough. And I think I would try to convince her that they are perfect.
Okay. And I think that is the right decision. And that's kind of what Judy's saying. Now, what's interesting about this is she goes, This is how she starts this passage, by the way. According to the American Society of Plastic and Reconstructive Surgeons, the most popular procedure today is breast enlargement. Now, I don't have anything against plastic surgery. If a woman wants to improve the way she looks in her own eyes, I say go for it. But I have to wonder about breast enlargement, because big breasts are a male fantasy, not a female fantasy. I read that passage and I said, are they still the most popular procedure in America? And the answer, Lily, is what do you think?
Would we include like filler and Botox as procedure?
No, those are non-invasive procedures. Okay, and I'll get to that list after. We're talking about surgical procedures.
Surgical procedures.
Under the knife.
Under the knife, I think it still is. I guess maybe lipo, but like I feel like people just do Ozempic now.
Ding, 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 madam. You have won the car. Lipo is the most popular now, right, followed by breast augmentation, then abdominoplasty, and then breast lift. And that's a huge shift in the past 4 years, because I do think that we're in like a pro-thin era and like a rejection of the Kardashian supremacy is happening.
Yes. Well, yeah, I feel like we've been revolting against, you know, the big 80s breasts for so long. I also think that people just want to be thin more. Or like perky and just want to wear like a little tank top with their like little tas. But I also think there have been so many crazy news stories lately in the past 20 years about breast implants going wrong, people almost dying, like Kathy Griffin. And I don't know, like, was that show botched? I think people are a little more afraid of getting the 10K breast implants now.
I think they are. And I think about Linda Evangelista. I was talking about this at a dinner party last night and we were discussing procedures like Cool Sculpting. And I was like, I kind of almost think it's good that Linda Evangelista had this like famously botched situation where it like grew and like shifted all around her body. Cause now I feel like it's turning people off to that procedure, which is probably good. Like, we need to see these scare cases, because I feel like there would be nothing worse. And this is kind of why I don't want to get like any like facial anything, because I'm like, if it went wrong,
so much can go wrong.
It would be so kind of like shameful and embarrassing if you were like, oh, I look worse now because I was so vain and I was like trying to stop the aging process and now I fucked myself up. It was like, there's just such a shame.
Didn't Kanye's mom die from like a bad plastic surgery thing?
That is ringing a bell.
Donda West.
It's scary. Okay, but the top five non-invasive surgeries?
Filler, eye lift, butt lift, BBL.
I think that those absolutely count as invasive.
Okay.
A BBL is like you're putting in like ass implants. Oh my God, I saw a BBL on the beach in Puerto Rico and I was like, they look insane to me.
No, the BBLs are crazy.
BBLs crazy. I'm just like, fake tits, I feel like you're like, yeah, like it's tit-like, but the fake asses are just like, they don't look like asses.
I saw a BBL that was just so insane where it was like the waist was so tiny, then the ass is just like 3 feet wide.
Oh, it's crazy. It's like nothing to do with the rest of the body. Number one is Botox, obviously. And then it's filler and then skin resurfacing, which I've always thought about. But again, the fear of debauchery is why I don't want to do it.
And it's like Judge Judy also being like, I'm glad I still have my breasts. And just to bring it back to like her like meeting Jerry and like getting divorced. And we're saying it's insane because she's just always looked like Judge Judy, like how she looks on the cover, which is like her classic perm and just like having that dentist receptionist neck. Do you know what I'm talking about? Just like she's just always looked 58. But recently she's straightened her hair and has like undone the perm and she looks so much younger now, even though she's probably
and
like
now
80.
She's looking like such a Golden Bachelor contestant.
Yeah. Because she got this like new, now Judge Judy is like on streaming on the IMDb app.
Not the IMDb app.
And like,
okay, it's still short though. It's not like long hair.
Yeah. No, it's not like so Golden Bachelor. She's having so many waves. But you know, it's straightened and it's, I do feel like it's taken some years off her life where it's like, she's one of those people who's like always like looked old.
Yeah, she's always looked old. She's an old soul and that's why we love her.
Even though she's still learning to undo the patriarchy in her marriage, like with all these passages about laundry.
She, as the woman, is dealing with the dry cleaning. It's also very like, the legal world is like one of the last professions where you do like wear a suit all the time.
Right. You need to be pressed and dry cleaned and starched.
Wait, and something I've always wondered with judges is like, I feel like this is the most like basic podcast thing to say, but like.
Say it. We're a podcast.
This is so like armchair expert, but I'm just like, what are they wearing under those robes? Like, If it were me.
That's like a...
Maybe that's just like such a Seinfeld joke.
Yeah, it's a little more Seinfeld. I don't think podcast armchair experts are being so like, what's the deal with judges? What do they wear under those robes?
But are they wearing a full suit? I kind of feel like the male judge is wearing like a suit and tie underneath the robe.
Yeah.
Anyway, so like there's this whole thing where Jerry is like, she does a dry cleaning and then she'll bring back the dry cleaning and he's got all these nits and picks about the dry cleaning and they're not starched right and the collars aren't pressed correctly and the darting isn't done. So she's running around. She's switching dry cleaners every week, making enemies all across the island. So then what she does is she just stops doing his laundry. This is also so her though, where she's so passive aggressive and she's being like, women need to stand up for yourself, but only after you do something really passive aggressive for like 3 weeks.
She's never really like standing up for herself. She's always doing like crazy ass wife antics where she's like, so I stopped doing his laundry. So he comes down the stairs and he's like, why are my shirts dirty? And she goes, pick one off the floor. And he's like, but they're dirty. And she's like, not my problem. Yeah. And then she finally tells him that like they need to do laundry separately now. And she found a secret dry cleaner and she won't let her name be like tarnished.
So she's not going to tell him about the dry cleaners.
Then they have a whole separate basic laundry fight.
The underwear thing?
Yeah.
Oh, right. This book is entirely about laundry. So basically, she's also not doing his underwear and he doesn't have any clean underwear.
It's actually a really long story, but she's picking him up from court. He's super grumpy. This explains your question of what they wear under the robe. She goes, we race upstairs and get out of our business clothes and change into jeans and t-shirts. And they're both putting on these like total mom and dad jeans.
The high-waisted mom jeans for lounging around the house. Jeans.
Jeans.
Home jeans.
Okay. New brand. Very good American. Home jeans.
Comfy enough for the couch. Cute enough for dinner.
Okay. So he's so mad. He finally tells her. Basically, his pants ripped. He asks his secretary for a needle and thread. Goes into the bathroom to fix his pants. He goes, apparently, the law secretary did indeed have a needle and thread. And he gave them to Jerry. Jerry then went to the men's bathroom to do the repair. He took off his pants so he could do the sewing and was standing there in a shirt, tie, and suit jacket, busy with the needle and thread. Suddenly, the door to the men's room swung open and two burly Secret Service agents came in. They had an office on the same floor of the federal building as Jerry did, like, humble brag. I was never so mortified in all of my life, Jerry said. Jerry, I quickly replied sympathetically. Don't be ridiculous. I'm sure they understood. Jerry locked his eyes on mine. Then he said, you think they understood this? And then he dropped his pants. My gorgeous husband of 6 months was wearing a pair of my lacy bikini pink underwear. And I'm a size 2.
My gorgeous husband of 6 months. I mean, it's just that her life is an Everybody Loves Raymond episode.
Like, no, it's like that could not be more sitcom. This like big, burly, stunning, gorgeous. He's like sewing in the men's bathroom in lacy pink underwear. You're so small. I'm like, the fact that he won even didn't just go commando and Secret Service agents. How embarrassing. I almost was like, I actually don't believe this is like too hilarious.
Have you ever worn women's underwear? Silky women's underwear.
You know, on some days.
Lacy panties.
When my girlfriend has it dropped off my laundry.
You put on her laciest agent provocateur thong.
La perla. No, I like have put on her underwear and then I am so like, damn, I'm being such
damn, this feels nice.
Nice. And I'm being such a chick cross-dresser wearing these nice little cotton briefs.
Oh, but they're not like, she doesn't have like the most.
She does,
panties.
But I feel like when I borrow her underwear, I'm taking more of the random.
You're not heading straight for the black.
Straight
face.
For like the laciest ones.
I'm trying to remember if I was like so Silence of the Lambs and like trying on my mother's silk underwear as a child, like in my room. I was definitely always putting on her like crazy 80s like blazers and like high heels, but the panties are not ringing a bell.
It wasn't like you got home from school, you made yourself a perfect grilled cheese, big glass of milk. And as you sipped your milk, you slid on her silk lawyer panties.
And I was just like, I object. Counselor, my chambers.
Order in the court.
With my milk mustache? Okay, wait, you were discussing your hair. I want to talk about her discussion of hair. While I'm on the subject, I'd like to say a word about hair. Lots of men just love long hair on a woman. They think it makes her sexier, I suppose. If you happen to like the way you look in a shorter, more manageable length of hair, and the man you're with is crazy about long hair, buy him a copy of the fairy tale Rapunzel. It features a beautiful young woman with hair, enough hair to clothe the nation. Do what works for you, not for him. If you were to mention that you thought Michael Jordan was fabulous looking, and you'd like to see what your partner looked like with his head shaved bald, very au courant, by the way, would he rush into the bathroom and make it so? Not in a million years. Okay, the interesting thing, which she's just like such a like second wave feminist and like such a like kind of like Hillarista in this way, but she's just like, women need to lighten up around the office.
Well, but that's what's so actually is second wave, because she's so just
no,
like,
I know.
Right. Like, she's so like, in my day, like, what? A guy tells you a joke and that's sexual harassment?
You can't even tell a dirty joke anymore. She's very Selena Meyer, man up. The man up campaign.
Yeah, because I feel like Hillary is so, I mean, obviously Epstein plane. And it's just like.
Yeah, she's just like, Bill, go get on your plane.
Well, it's also funny because it's like this whole book, she's also just being like, why waste your time and like sue people for small reasons? But I'm like, that's your entire job.
I know. And she's just like, get up off the couch, but also watch Judge Judy.
Also, like, don't be bitter and like sue your boss for $2,000. Her whole show is just being like, I owe you $400.
I mean, listen, the role of judge, it's not a compassionate one. Like, all judges are conservative, like, at their core. Like, it's definitionally like a conservative position to be a judge. You are passing judgment. And especially after so long, like, you do, I think you have kind of a disdain for all these idiots parading in front of your courtroom with their petty squabbles. And you're just kind of just like, oh, for Christ's sake.
It's also fun to see a judge judging, because it's like in all other movies, it's all about the jury and their decision.
No, thank you. No, absolutely. Courtroom TV elevates the judge finally in the narrative and like stops giving primacy to the jury.
Right, where you're like, well, what's your opinion if you're literally the judge?
No, it's so true. Wait, thank you for calling in the legal system right now, because it's always just like, so then what's the judge doing? The judge is just like presiding and being like,
yeah,
okay,
they're literally just presiding and being like sustained. And like,
I'm in a robe.
You're in contempt.
But like, you're not allowed to actually like think anything. I mean, I guess you're kind of making some judgments about the legal process and being like, okay, this can continue or whatever. This can't. But it's like,
they're kind of being the manager of the court.
Yeah, thank you. Campaign to rename the role of judge as manager, because that's what y'all are doing. Unless you're Judge Judy and there is no jury and you're just
right,
being like,
being
overruled,
like,
please leave my court.
Please leave my court. I'm disturbed by you and you owe her $2,100. My question about Judge Judy also is like, I wonder if people are just like, okay, you do owe me $400, but like, let's just try to go on Judge Judy.
Oh, if they're faking it. It's television. Yeah, of course. 100%. It's like House Hunters. It's like anything. Yeah.
Right.
Maybe we should go on Judge Judy.
Well, that one I sent you that was so like these women writing a cookbook for Amazon. I was like, I'd be like.
It's like the most like self-published cookbook. And like.
I remember our guest, Mickey Blanco, wanted to take our Chicago landlord. He wanted to apply to like the People's Court or Judge Judy.
Because you guys paid too much rent?
I think it was like she didn't give the security deposit back, because I'm sure the house was like, smells.
Sure, it was an absolute disaster.
Yeah. And then I remember my dad like getting involved, because I guess like my dad was the one who signed the lease. So he was like, please don't take this woman to the People's Court. He was like, I think it's going to be a waste of your time.
And you were like, no, I'm going to be on TV.
No, I'm going to be on TV, Dad. Don't you get it? So we didn't take Maria to the People's Court.
And you also never got that security deposit back.
No, we didn't.
Also in her wife antics, when she's so mad at men for, say it with me, leaving the toilet seat up. And she like falls into a bare bowl. I was just like,
that's happened to me when you've left the seat up. Okay, yeah, but like, I said it. No, and I just go along with it.
What I don't understand, and I'm not trying to be a misogynist here, but I'm kind of like, well, why aren't you looking to see if the seat's down? Because like sometimes I sit down to take a dump, but I'm not. I also look to see if it's down. It's like, aren't you using your eyes?
Well, I think the time that happened to me, it was like, because rarely is a man pissing in my home. So kind of the surprise, it was kind of like the case of the unexpected. You kind of just walk in, sit down fast.
You're speed pissing. You're just like, walk in, sit down, don't look at anything, leave. Okay, but so she does fall in at night. And then she's like, after I take care of my personal business, I went into the kitchen, turned on the light and started searching in the cupboards. I chose two fairly large pot lids, then quietly returned to the bedroom. Jerry was sound asleep, sleeping the sleep of the good, the innocent, and the pure. I quietly got into bed. Then I turned over and straddled him, banging the pot covers together like the cymbals and cannon fire at the climactic finish of Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture. What are you doing? Jerry screamed at me, giving you the polite version of what he actually said. The next time you think about leaving the toilet seat up, I said, brandishing the pot covers, I want you to remember this moment. Your heart's pounding, isn't it? I woke you up, didn't I? Yeah, okay, Jerry muttered. No, not okay, I threatened, standing on the bed. If I fall into the toilet, it wakes you up too.
This image, her straddling him, banging pots. It's hot, honestly.
It's pretty erotic.
No, clearly they have an amazing sexual dynamic.
Yeah. They're like a solid twice a week.
Classic twice a week. And she's always using this phrase, or one of the chapters is called, you can't teach a bull how to cha-cha. Which is like all about how you like can't teach a man to do laundry or put the toilet seat down. But then at the same time, this whole book is about how you do need to train your man to put the toilet seat down.
I know. The thesis like is constantly falling apart, like under the weight of her own conflicting examples. Because then she's also like, men don't clean. But then when we got divorced, apparently Jerry kept his house spick and span. He had a Windex in one hand, a sponge in the other every day of the week. I never found out what happened to that guy. And you're like, so he does clean. And they will fend for themselves if you leave them alone. But then you also just...
But then she was like, he cleans so bad. And he was, like, cleaning the window with the sponge that he used to clean the toilet with. I mean, I was like, that's so me, just as a maid.
You're always like, yeah, I'm washing their spatula in the toilet. What? It's water.
It's the same water. Stop being waterous.
It's easier to put all the utensils in the toilet.
Also, she divorced him because she, like, after her dad died, she wanted more affection from Jerry. The quote-unquote, the affection she was getting from her dad, which was, she describes as remembering birthdays and anniversaries.
And he's just being such a man and, and can't remember my anniversary. And so they did have a big fight about it, went to couples therapy, and then, like, he is working on it, is remembering more. But that's an interesting insight. I do think that's probably true. Like, she's getting that emotional labor is being done by daddy. Although, maybe dads just don't remember their daughter's birthdays.
You know what it is? What her main point is this also is dad gets rewards, but it's the mom going out and buying the presents and putting things on the calendar and making the social engagements.
Right, because her dad was this hotshot dentist and her mom is actually the one like doing all the work, and she saw that dynamic at play and realizes later in life that she never really appreciated her mom as much. And now it's kind of like the shoes on the other foot and she's the mom not getting all the appreciation. It is still just like she is ultimately going to have the most like almost 1950s idea of like male-female dynamics. I mean, then this whole book is just about laundry. Question, how many men does it take to change a roll of toilet paper? Answer, no one knows. It's never been attempted.
Oh, wait, I had a question for you. How often do you think you and your boy go through a roll? Because you're not like using it for like pissing. So like...
Well, I'm always wiping the bowl after I piss.
Oh.
I'm wiping the porcelain. Because I'm very considerate.
Very considerate. Because you're spilling on the porcelain. It's getting everywhere.
Spilling is an interesting word to use.
Spilling, not the word.
It's called splatter. It's a little splashback from the piss hitting the water at such a velocity.
So as you know, I'm new to this. I don't live in a cis male household.
But you've probably noticed in bars how there might be like piss on the rim.
Definitely.
Of the porcelain.
I mean, the biggest question is always like at the women's bathroom also when it's like everywhere. And I'm like, I just actually don't understand how that happens.
And you're just like, who did that?
Who did that? So when they get divorced for a year because of this, like she's not getting the affection. And then basically like they can't stay away from each other. And they were talking the whole time. So they get back together and she realizes like, it's fine if he can't remember her birthday because he's like hilarious and she knows he does care for her. It just may not show in a certain way. And there's this like one time when she goes shopping with her friend and buys herself an engagement ring because he never got her like a fancy one, which her mother did the same thing. And he's like, what'd you do? And he's reading the splits pages or whatever. And she goes, I went to the jeweler. And she was like, that got him to put the paper down. And she was like, it was the act of self-care.
But then when she tells him about it, he's like, good for you. And she's like, and that's when I knew that Jerry was a good man because he's proud of her for doing something that makes her feel good. So even though he is not necessarily going to buy her rings or remember her birthday, when she remembers her own birthday, he's like, that a girl.
Good for you. No, I was like, I guess this is like a cute story of him being like, good for you for like going out and like getting this fabulous ring for yourself. And I feel like he obviously is turned on by her being a girl boss.
Oh, for sure. Okay, but this brings me back to the sexual dynamic where I'm just like, how much is she topping from the bottom? Where I'm like, or should we say bottoming from the top? Because that scene of her with the pots and pans straddling him, I'm like, maybe that's a really natural position for them. And they're very
comfortable
like with regular cowgirl.
Yeah, I think she's classic cowgirl. She's getting on top. It's so actually kind of reminds me of one of the first sex scenes I saw in film in the Jerry Maguire movie and his like girlfriend before Renee Zellweger, and she's like riding him and they're like talking about like law school or like sports agent stuff. And I feel like she's riding Jerry, just being like, so they came in with the case, it got thrown out, blah blah blah.
Do you think their sex is lasting like 35 minutes, or is it like 3 minutes?
I think it's a little more like 10 to 15 at most.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he gets Viagra.
He pops a Viagra, but then it's like you couldn't maybe last too long. I feel like I can see like a 75-year-old guy with an enlarged prostate like not coming, but having like a rock hard Viagra dick for like 30 minutes. And she's just being like, honey, I'm getting raw.
Yeah, and she's like, I gotta change the towels.
Yeah.
After a lake house.
Oh, wait. The one other thing that I did like a lot is when she's at that, like, trade show or whatever, and she has some booth, like, signing autographs. And then she starts telling her, like, contract is up for renegotiations. And she was like, when I sat down at my booth, I noticed three big bosses were standing nearby in the convention floor, having a, what appeared to be a very intense summit meeting. Men's meetings always look very intense. And it's just like all the presidents of like the TV networks that like syndicate her show are there. And so she stops the people she's sending autographs for. And she's like, you see those three men over there? Well, if you'd really like my show, it'd mean a lot to me if you go over there and tell them before you leave. Thanks. She did. And I could see the bosses nodding and smiling. Men don't like to be interrupted when they're in a huddle. That's because they think everything they talk about is so important.
Oh, well.
But then she keeps interrupting them by sending fans over who are just saying they love Judge Judy. Like, after my hour of autograph time was over, about to leave, when I was called over to side room with the bosses that just finished their meeting, Larry came over to me and said, hey, what's the matter? Don't you like to sign autographs? Both John and Peter laughed at this. They were being cute. I prefer to sign my name immediately following the words, for deposit only, I responded with a smile. They all roared with laughter. Disarming, yes. Made my point, yes. Women have to learn to do that. Don't be afraid to give as good as you get. So again, she's like, do wife antics to like annoy men and then show that you're sassy and you know what you're doing, and then they'll respect you and run you your check.
She did another crazy wife antic where she went once to like the judge's lunchroom. And some judge to her was like, this is the judge's room. Like, only judges eat here. And so then she pretends to be a maid, wife antics, to like fool him. And she goes, oh, so sorry. I'm just here to clean up. And everyone else in that room knew she was a judge. And then he finds her later and he's like, you made a fool of me in front of all the other judges. Why don't you say you were a judge? And she's just like, you made a fool of yourself, loser. She's iconic.
But basically, that is, I want to ask our fans, if you could when you see the executive leadership of iHeart at your next trade show, please go up and tell them how much you love our podcast. Celebrity Book Club.
Mother's Day is coming, and mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
By the power invested in me by the County of Queens
and the Court of Celebrity Book Club,
I hereby declare these segments guilty of being fabulous.
A plaintiff, what does she wear? You are ordered to pay, what does she eat? $400.
The bailiff, how does she live? We'll see you out. Court adjourned. Okay. What is she?
What does she eat?
I feel like she's so like split pea
bird.
Soup.
Yes, it's so judge's lunch.
Judge like, lunch.
Like there's the cafeteria that's like in the courtroom where it's like it's all these like classic judge watering holes where she's like getting the split pea soup with the piece of bread.
And it's also because she has been 58 forever that she's always eating senior citizen food. Like even at 26, she was just like, I'll just get the split pea because it's also bird and she's tiny and she's pecking and she's buried in papers and gavels.
And I think like there's a Diet Coke.
Oh, for sure. She's the most Diet Coke person alive.
It's like Diet Coke, Pepto, split pea. Jerry's like, where's my Pepto? She's like, I drank it.
There is Pepto in every cabinet in that house. But she's actually pouring the Pepto into the split pea soup.
Into this Pepto soup.
Pepto swirl.
I also feel it's like classic like mom of seven boys in this way at their lake house where like Well, she says she doesn't cook anymore. Because I was like, you are rich at this point, where she's like, I do the laundry, but I don't cook. So I'm like,
she definitely has like a housekeeper kind of making her bland meals, like corn salad for lunch. She's like, oh, it's corn salad again. All right.
Some cold cuts.
How does she live? I feel like she has 11 houses. I feel like she has a house in just like Sun Valley. She has a house in Montecito. She has a house in
Florida.
She has two houses in Florida, one in West Palm, like one in Naples.
She has like a midtown or like a Central Park overlooking.
Yeah. And it's in like such a like kind of 1970s like high rise.
She has like an Adirondacks.
Oh, if you like the Adirondack house is so just like marble countertops and just like huge wooden kitchen with 1,000 cabinets and like appliances. And she does have a Soda Stream, and they also have like a stand mixer, and they're just like have all the appliances.
All the appliances
on the countertop.
Like a Hamilton Beach blender.
Yeah. And like, she's definitely getting like, you know, whatever, like someone on like the production staff, like got everyone like butter warmers for Christmas. And like, there's like a weird, like, induction butter heater.
And she's like, how do I even use this?
Yeah.
I'm like, does she? I feel like she doesn't drink.
She...
like, she had, like, the one beer at Peggy Doyle's.
Yeah, she doesn't strike me as a
it's drinker. Like, at a dinner party, she's having one glass of Josh.
She doesn't mention alcohol at all in this book. I mean, Jerry likes steak and red wine.
But Jerry must be so, like, scotch.
Oh, you think he's even scotch, not red wine? I think he's red wine with dinner. I think he's a big, heavy cab during dinner.
That too. You can do both.
Yeah, but like, and the couches, like, okay, I have two ideas for couches. I'm either like, they could be almost like a thick floral, like brocade.
I was about to say, it's like a thick floral kind of like 90s pattern. Laura Ashley.
It's definitely like almost like rock hard to the touch. Like you could use the couch as a cutting board.
Bounce off of it.
Yeah. Or it could be like tan leather in their like Central Park high rise.
Yeah, the Central Park is a little more modern. And then I think like the Westchester or the Florida is having this carpeted, normal, like parent house that's like comfortable grandma core.
But like in an 80s way. And there's like framed photos of her with like the season 13 like production crew of Judge Judy and the season 57 production crew.
And the grandchildren.
Yeah. Lots of photos of the grandchildren.
Tons of towels, tons of front gate towels everywhere.
What does she wear is obviously robes.
Robes. And I mean, she said, I think she is in like such like little Filene's TBT, like Bloomingdale's slacks.
Okay, but I actually kind of think that she's not slacks because, yes, we're calling her like second wave feminist, but I think in this way that she's even more like first wave feminist, she's a little bit more just like...
skirt
Susan B. Anthony, where it's like I'm a little bit like she's not even doing pantsuit. Like her girl bossery is still like I'm doing antics, and that's more 50s and skirt suit to me than it is being like Ms. Magazine, I'm in a pantsuit and like rising to the top.
I guess it's not even pantsuit. It's a little more of just like the most basic black work slacks at Bloomingdale's. And like a white top. But I do think she does wear like total mom jeans that are like stone
home jeans.
Home jeans. Well, I did. Okay, this is just cheating. But I saw this photo of her and Jerry and they're both in mom jeans wearing big breast cancer t-shirts.
Oh, I mean, she's so the Jimmy Fund.
Yeah, her style is so pink. As in like
breast cancer awareness.
Oh, wait. I've been saving to tell you this on this app. In the iHeart elevator, a headline came up in that little TV. And it says, Judge Judy endorses Nikki Haley.
That makes so... well, this,
which is maybe so skirt suit.
This is so skirt suit. And that's exactly what I was saying earlier about like Dennis being a Republican. She's so Nikki Haley. I mean, she's very just like, Trump, are you kidding me? He doesn't know his ass from his face.
Right.
She's just like, we need a smart woman in there who knows what she's doing.
And she's like, that man is a criminal. Okay.
Yeah.
But we need a smart woman who knows the left from right, knows how to raise kids.
And is going to do something about the immigration.
Oh, my God.
So, who are you in the book? I was kind of wondering if you are that anecdote about the woman whose dream is to be a bank teller.
And then she gets, like, outbanked
by an ATM. And she's like not reading the writing on the wall when they start to install more ATMs in the bank. And she's kind of being like, I'm good at talking to people. I'm just going to keep doing my telling job and just handing people money, not realizing that I'm being replaced by a machine.
By online banking. Okay, but then she has the story about the maid. She's like, oh, you think you can replace a maid anytime you want, but actually they're indispensable because like they know all your secrets.
Yeah, they do. And you do have these legacy clients who literally will not let you go.
Yeah, but then also I have been let go by legacy clients who like...
ultimately were dissatisfied by your mating.
And then I am thinking I know all their secrets and then I am replaced.
And they actually don't care that you're telling your secrets on your podcast.
So, yeah, I guess I'm a mix between the bank teller and the maid.
I feel like I'm her boss coming and being like, girl, come to Peggy Doyle's.
Definitely. And she's like, oh, but I want to go and watch Wheel of Fortune with my parents. And you're just like, you're 32. Like, you need
you
to meet
your
a man.
Whole
like,
life
girl.
Ahead if you come to the fucking bar. All right. I give this book maybe 4 out of 5 gavels. There's a lot of one-liners in it.
Pretty dope.
Pretty funny. Yeah. It's really thin. It's a great beach read.
For a workcation.
She's a character.
She's a character and her humor shines. I mean, if you love the TV show, you're going to love the book.
You definitely know. What you see is what you get with Judy, and the same girl on TV is the girl in this book.
I think I once owned Don't Pee on My Leg. I don't know. Lost it somehow. This one, I think she is honestly giving the tea about her marriage so much and like roasting him. Actually, I think in this really healthy way. And she's like, you may think like I'm roasting my husband too much, but he's the first one to laugh at all these stories.
Yeah, I think that's really beautiful. I think if you can't roast your husband in print, then is he even a husband?
True words. True words. Yeah. I also give this 4.2 Bloomingdale slacks. Under the robe out of 5. No, sorry, lacy bikini underwear out of 5.
Worn in the men's bathroom.
Okay, thank club kids.
Court adjourned.
Court adjourned.
Court is in recess until next week.
Best. Order in the court. This episode of Celebrity Book Club has been executive produced by Judge Christina Everett, presiding over iHeart Studios, supervising producers Abu Zafar, he's a wonderful bailiff, Darby Masters, the defendant, also actually produced it, even though she is being sued. But, she represented herself. The artwork was done by Teddy Blanks. I stole the artwork and he's suing me. Theme song done by Stephen Phillips Horse. You can see him perform at the Nassau Coliseum. And, yeah, this podcast was really co-produced at the Nassau County Courthouse with Prologue Projects.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
she looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.